A medical update on COVID-19. This morning, the Maine CDC reported the lowest number since October of new COVID-19 cases in Maine. Meantime, nationally, new case numbers are no longer dropping. A clinical trial has shown a new vaccine to be effective, this one made by a company called Novavax. And public health experts are tracking and learning more about the contagious Delta variant of COVID-19. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The medical news about COVID-19, vaccines, and variants continues to make headlines, and some of it can leave your head spinning. Today on Maine Calling, two medical experts join us to explain the latest information and to bring us up to date on the situation here in Maine. What are your questions? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Governor Mills announced Friday that Maine's COVID-19 emergency will end on June 30th, and Maine's new case rate is way down. But questions remain about what is safe and what is not, and whether new variants pose a threat. We'll discuss these questions and more with our experts today. Joining me, Dr. Dora Mills, who is Chief Health Improvement Officer at Maine Health, and Dr. James Jarvis, who is Senior Physician Executive and System Incident Command at Northern Light Health. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We anticipate a lot of questions, so please, as always, be sure and keep them brief. Thank you, Dr. Mills and Dr. Jarvis, for coming back on Maine Calling. And Dr. Mills, I'll start with you. We heard the news of the day, only 13 new cases, the lowest number since October. But what struck me, what Jennifer Mitchell just said on the news, is still 39 people in the hospitals in Maine and 23 on critical care. So more people being cared for with very serious disease than new cases. Is that what you would expect at this point in the pandemic?
Well, you know, the numbers are all coming down. So that's, I mean, just several weeks ago, we were, you know, well over 100 people in the hospital. And actually not that long before that, we were over 200 in the hospital. So the fact that we're down those lower numbers is good. And you know, hospitalizations are a lagging indicator. So meaning you usually see the case numbers go down, the numbers of people who are diagnosed with COVID. And then later on, you see the people who are hospitalized go down. So it's a bit of a lagger. And what we are seeing, and I don't know, Jim, probably at Northern Light Health, I know we're on the phone half the days together, but I think the last time we were on the phone late last week, we were both talking about how we are seeing more people who are hospitalized for a longer period of time. So sometimes the numbers are, I think, are coming down more slowly, in part because some of those people who are hospitalized are quite ill and are in the hospital for several weeks sometimes. We're also seeing a lot of people hospitalized who are in their 30s through 60s, you know, versus a year ago, it was a lot of people in their 70s and 80s. So they're younger and they tend to be sicker. We're also seeing a lot of the variant, the B117, also known as the Alpha variant or the UK variant, as well as some of the Delta or the Indian variant. And there is some evidence that they tend to be sicker. It's much more contagious, but it's also tends to be making people sicker. But the most important thing is that just about everybody who's in the hospital has one thing in common. They're not vaccinated. They're not fully vaccinated. So we're really, you know, seeing the impact of the vaccines with the numbers and hospitalizations coming down. But also, sadly and tragically, those people who are hospitalized are not vaccinated.
Dr. Jarvis, you're seeing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what Dora said. You know, we are seeing fewer, which is nice, but they tend to be sicker now. Most of the time here at Eastern Maine Medical Center, about 50% of the patients who are admitted are on a ventilator. And if you remember, in the middle of the pandemic, we were talking about doing everything we could to keep people off of ventilators. So that means that they're even sicker than the people we were seeing before. Because we know that using mechanical ventilation is not the best thing for COVID-19 and is often a last-ditch effort in order to preserve life. And so that is the concerning thing, is that, you know, the pandemic is not over, but there is great news in that we're seeing far less of those mild cases that we were seeing. But people still need to take care. And if you haven't been vaccinated, please, this is your opportunity to get that vaccine. As Doris said, you know, we are not seeing people who are very ill who have been vaccinated. And so that's the key here. Vaccine is our way out of the pandemic. It always has been, and it continues to be.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, Dr. Jarvis. As you well know, there are some people in Maine who have died after being vaccinated. What do we need to understand about those people? I believe the number as of last week was 8. It may be larger today. People who have been vaccinated yet still died of COVID, what did they have in common?
So one thing that they had in common is those were people who were already seriously ill prior to getting COVID-19. They were vaccinated as part of our overall efforts to vaccinate as many people as possible. And many of those people that did die were actually already under hospice care or in a situation where their chronic medical condition was known to that they were going to die shortly from that chronic medical condition. I did speak to the Maine CDC last week, and they did confirm that they did not believe that COVID was the absolute cause of their death, rather just that they were infected. And in fact, some of those people had been picked up by screening processes, meaning that they were screening either because it was routine screening in a particular facility or someone else in the facility had symptoms of COVID. It really wasn't that they died from COVID. And I think that's a clear point. But even so, even had they died from COVID, those numbers are incredibly small compared to the population at large and the number of unvaccinated people who have both been seriously ill and died from COVID. We know among the vaccinated population here in Maine, very few have had any symptoms whatsoever from COVID once they're fully vaccinated. And so we shouldn't let these numbers scare us that maybe vaccines aren't working. They are working. And in fact, just talking about the overall caseloads in the state of Maine prove that they're working even better than when we were talking. If you remember when you had us on the show earlier this year, we were talking about vaccines preventing hospitalization, severe illnesses, and death. Now we're talking about vaccine preventing spread from person to person. That's a very different conversation now. So we weren't promising you wouldn't get COVID back in December. Now we're talking about that if you've been fully vaccinated, the likelihood of you having COVID is very low, and certainly the likelihood of severe disease, hospitalization, and death is exceedingly low.
Dr. Mills, let me ask you this question, though. Are you worried from a public health messaging standpoint that someone who's not vaccinated may hear that Maine only has 13 new cases today and think, I don't have to get vaccinated. This thing's taking care of itself.
Yeah, you know, that is a concern. And one of the major reasons I'm concerned is because of these variants that are emerging, particularly Alpha and Delta, also known as B.1.1.7 or B.1.6.1.7, also known as the UK, also known as the Indian variant. So they go by several names
variants.
Now, variants, but they are much more contagious. So the B.1.1.7, which is the predominant variant in the US and in Maine right now, also known as the UK variant, that is about 50 to 100% more contagious than the original strains. The Indian or the Delta variant, 617 variant, is thought to be about 60% more contagious than the B.1.1.7, the UK variant. And it is thought to be probably going to be the predominant variant in Maine and the country within the next several weeks. The Indian variant is now the predominant variant in the UK, and it is postponing their reopening for at least a month. It is so, and all the people getting it are unvaccinated, and they have vaccine rates on par with ours, but they just have enough people, again, you know, 30, 40% of the population unvaccinated, that when you get particularly a strain that is that much more contagious, it just increases the likelihood that anybody who's unvaccinated is going to get it. And that's my concern, is that people who are unvaccinated, their chances are very, very high that they're going to get COVID, particularly with these more contagious strains. So you know, right now we might have 13 cases that we know of as that were tested, you know, yesterday, but we, with these new variants arising, we're likely to see much more spread of those variants. So people who are unvaccinated are really putting themselves and others at risk.
So you're concerned that instead of this number 13 being part of a long-term trajectory now, if more people don't get vaccinated, it's going to be a dip. And we're going to look at the graph later on and say, if only we knew then.
Yeah. And it's just going to postpone our own, you know, getting back to normal, even though we're quickly getting back to normal. But, you know, I want to make sure our kids stay in school. I want to make sure that we are able to take our masks off in more and more places. You know, we all want to get back to more normal life. And many of us are just about there anyway. But, you know, still, I mean, I'm making sure that I'm gathering with people who are vaccinated. I don't want to have people who are unvaccinated in my home. And I do know people who are unvaccinated and I just feel bad about it. But it's like, I just don't want to risk their health. Or mine, even though I'm fully vaccinated, it's an armor. It's a great, you know, shield to have on, but it's not perfect. As Dr. Fauci has said, you know, it's a great fire suit that we have on as vaccine, but it doesn't mean you're going to walk into a fire with it, you know? So even if you have a good suit on, a good fire suit on. So, I think it's just one of those things where, you know, we just want to really get back to more and more normal, and vaccine as the state theater has on the marquee, or did until recently, you know, vaccine is the gateway drug to shows and a more normal life.
Dr. Jarvis, let's talk about the news this morning that there may be another vaccine coming on the scene, that Novavax has had great success in its clinical trials. 100% it claims against the original strain of H1N1, but then also a 90% effectiveness. COVID, excuse me. Oh my goodness.
We know what you meant.
after a year and a half of talking about it too. 100% protection against the original strain of COVID, and then 90% against the new strains. Dr. Jarvis, one might ask, do we need another vaccine? And if so, how and what way does this help?
Yeah, so the question about do we need another vaccine? We may not need another vaccine here in the United States, where right now we actually have a trove of vaccine available to us, which is why if anybody's been waiting, you know, to get their vaccine for convenience sake, now is the most convenient time to get your vaccine, as it's now available at many doctor's offices, pharmacies, as well as clinics sponsored by large hospitals. So there's plenty of vaccine out there. But what's different about this Novavax vaccine is that it's like a more traditional vaccine that many of us have had since childhood, where it basically takes a part of the protein on the virus and adds a little bit to it to boost our immune system. So very similar to the way a traditional influenza vaccine. So you mentioned H1N1. One of the things that Novavax hopes to do is be able to combine a flu vaccine with their COVID vaccine. So you only have to get one shot. For the United States, what it actually portends for us is it's a great one for a booster shot. Relatively easy to manufacture, relatively easy to distribute. And therefore, as we get into the fall season, and we'll probably start talking about who and when people need boosters by that time, it's a great vaccine for that kind of factor. For the rest of the world, this is a much easier vaccine for distribution. And so when you're talking about nations that right now are struggling because they aren't as blessed as the United States to have three vaccines that have good production here in the U.S., it is hope for those countries as well. If you look at the worldwide statistics for where COVID has again kind of blossomed, they're with some of our key trading partners. Dora mentioned the UK. You know, we trade with the UK. We want to travel to the UK. And if they're having increased number of cases, it's only a matter of time before we'll start seeing that here in the United States. So it is welcome news to have yet another tool in our tool belt to help fight this disease. And again, vaccination is our single best way to get through the pandemic. So having another one in our toolbox is a great news.
And I agree with everything Jim said. And I just also wanted to add that, you know, we will now have three different technologies using manufacturing vaccine in the U.S. So the two mRNA vaccines, the Pfizer and Moderna, one technology. And then we've got the J&J, which uses a similar technology to AstraZeneca, which is a adenovirus-based vaccine, or uses an adenovirus to produce it. And excuse me. And then we've now got the Novavax, which uses recombinant DNA technology to produce the spike protein from that's the same protein that's on the outside of the virus, as well as an adjuvant, as Jim mentioned. So the wonderful thing about that is if somebody, you know, by rare, there are really rare reasons why people can't get one of the vaccines, the mRNA vaccines or the J&J. But if they have one of those rare reasons, it, like an allergy, for instance, to one of the ingredients, it gives them another option. So the medical contraindications for getting one of these vaccines is now gone down to very close to zero, because if you can't get one, you have now, you'll now have, you know, three other choices, but also three different technologies. And as Jim mentioned too, this vaccine is stored at refrigerator temperature, and we believe has a pretty long shelf life. So it is a vaccine, not only as an option for other people in the US, particularly for boosters, as Jim mentions, but also for the world. It is, I think that it's gonna be about 21 days apart, at least in the clinical trials it was. So it'll still be a two dose vaccine, but it's just incredible to have these options. And again, using technologies, this one using technology has been around for a long time, and that we already have other vaccines based on that. So that's exciting for those people who are concerned about newer technologies, like, well, this is an old technology. So that's good.
Before we go to a break, Jim, I want to ask you about another piece of news that has been out there just in the last week. And this is the a study by the Cleveland Clinic that shows that people who are already who had COVID-19 may not need to be vaccinated. How do you read this, that there's still that may, having had it, may give you the same immunity as a vaccine? What are you advising patients who have had COVID-19?
I still advise what the CDC advises, which is that everybody get vaccinated, whether you've had COVID-19 or not. We certainly have seen cases of individuals who had COVID, even severe disease with COVID, and then get reinfected and then have symptoms again. And then not only that, but they're still able to spread the virus. We know traditionally for coronaviruses that human beings do not get lifelong immunity to coronavirus, regardless of how severe their illness is. And so that's the word of caution. Is it good news for us? Yes. Does it mean that, you know, that particularly in other countries where they don't have as much vaccine available, that maybe that can help to curb the spread? But it is not going to end the spread of disease. And certainly we aren't going to talk about having like chickenpox parties, that we're going to have COVID parties. Get sick so that you don't get sick. That makes no sense for with a disease as severe as COVID-19. And therefore, I still recommend vaccination to my patients, even if they've had the disease.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. Already so many questions coming in for you too. The phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can always send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on Facebook or Instagram. We are talking about medical updates when it comes to COVID-19. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Real Maine, a program of the Maine Bureau of Agriculture, featuring Maine-grown and made agricultural products. Learn more at realmaine.com. By Revision Energy, an employee-owned solar company dedicated to helping Mainers reduce carbon emissions. Learn more at revisionenergy.com. And BCM Environmental and Land Law of Northern New England, helping landowners, farmers, and governments problem solve. BCMEnviroLaw.com.
The UK officially left the European Union months ago after years of negotiation, but for some small British businesses, it's only now hitting home.
When you're not used to very complicated customs regimes, it's quite scary, and I'm not necessarily, that's not my forte as a businesswoman.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, our honey merchant from London's Borough Market, next time on Marketplace.
You can hear that this evening at 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. A reminder about our Maine's Political Pulse podcast and corresponding newsletter. Maine's Political Pulse is a weekly discussion on the politics here at home with our two top Maine Public News political reporters, Steve Missler and Mal Leary. The Political Pulse podcast and newsletter are both available online at mainepublic.org. You can have the Political Pulse newsletter delivered straight to your inbox on Friday mornings by subscribing at mainepublic.org/pulse.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking with our medical experts about the latest advice on vaccinations, immunity, masks, and more. Our guests are Dr. Jim Jarvis, who is a family physician in System Incident Command for Northern Light Health, and Dr. Dora Mills, who is Chief Health Improvement Officer at Maine Health. Share your questions. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or call us at 1-800-399-3566. And we will start with a call. We'll go to Karen, who's calling from Holton. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm vaccinated. I'm very much for everything that Dr. Fauci and your publications have had. Recently, I have come in contact with acquaintances. First, a family, the adults are vaccinated. They have teenage, older than 12 children, and they are refusing to let their children become vaccinated because of the negative effects on the reproduction body system, and I was amazed and blank to that. The other is a very educated business person with whom my husband works, and he is not himself or anyone, adult or child, in his family because of the detrimental effects to a person's DNA and also to their immune system. My question is, or my comment and question, is there anything that we, the proponents of getting vaccine into people's arms and this pandemic under control, able to counteract these untruths, I guess. I'm flabbergasted by it. It's just been a recent experience of mine, and I'll leave the discussion in your capable hands. Thank you.
Sure, Karen. Yeah, and you know, I'm glad we started with this question because it is a question that comes up every time we do this program. Mm-hmm. People who are wondering how to talk with others in their life who disagree with them and who they would like to have contact with. And Dora, you're nodding. In this case, especially someone who is hesitant to give teenagers the vaccine because of concerns about future reproduction. So why don't you address that specific concern about will this harm a child's future in terms of being able to reproduce? And also, and then the general, I'll have both of you talk about the general concern about finding ways to talk about this that are effective.
Yeah, these are getting to be kind of tough conversations, aren't they? Because there are so many different myths out there about the vaccine. And, you know, what I try to do is just try to meet people where they're at and just find out, you know, do you have concerns? What are your concerns? Refer them to, you know, there's a lot of websites and others that do debunk a lot of these myths. One, you know, certainly there is no evidence that in terms of the specific issue of reproductive health, there's no pathophysiological way that these vaccines can impact one's reproductive health, either future reproduction or current. In fact, we know, however, that COVID is much more severe, for instance, with pregnant women. And so I, you know, try to explain that. And also one of the things I often say is that, you know, every doctor, every nurse I know got their kids signed up for vaccine as soon as they were eligible. I mean, if that's, you know, to me, it's one thing that Jim and I got vaccinated, right? But when you have enough faith in the vaccines that you have your own children. I have two, you know, 18 and a 21 year old kids. And my goodness, as soon as the age range expanded, I mean, believe me, I got them vaccinated. And so did everybody else I knew who was in healthcare, you know, signing their kids up right away to get vaccinated. So I think that speaks volumes to the benefits of the vaccine and the fact that we have that much faith in it, that we've gotten our own children vaccinated. And then finally, I'd say that, you know, we do have, I know Northern Light Health and Maine Health and many others have a lot of pop-up clinics that are going on all over the state. I was just at one on Saturday. other day. We had at Tumble Down Brewery in Farmington or Farmington Falls. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. And one of the things we invite people to do is to come to these pop-up clinics throughout the community and have a conversation. So I was at Becky's Diner last week. We had people that just showed up. We had a couple of mothers that dragged their young adult kids in, to be honest, to have that conversation. And, you know, we were able to have one-on-one conversations with them and actually get them vaccinated, because after they had a conversation and had some of those concerns placated, it was no big deal. And some of them were also, frankly, just, they hadn't expressed concern, but what they were really concerned about was the shot. And when I assured them, I'm a pediatrician, I've given thousands of shots, I guarantee you I can give a shot that you will barely feel. And I have several techniques to do that. And I have several techniques to calm people down, including some hypnotic kind of techniques. And I use them. I've used them on these clinics, and people are said, wow, I didn't realize I could get a shot and it could be painless. So sometimes the expressed concern may be different than the underlying concern too. So I often just encourage people to go to their own doctor or to go to a pop-up clinic and have a conversation.
Dr. Jarvis.
Yeah, I agree exactly with Dora. And I have two adult daughters as well, a 19-year-old and a 24-year-old, both of whom hope to have future fertility. And my 24-year-old is a frontline worker, so she actually was vaccinated before I was. And my 19-year-old volunteered at the vaccine clinic here in Bangor. And so she was lucky enough to get a vaccine early on because of her volunteer efforts. And both of them didn't fret about that. But then if you look at the sheer number of women in healthcare, and healthcare is both dominated by women and women who are younger, who have been vaccinated because they know it's the right thing to do. And if you think about it, long-term fertility, that's affected by whether or not you're alive. And so you're taking the vaccine to protect yourself. That's protecting your fertility. We have had no issues with vaccines and fertility before. This is the first time we've ever had this as a major concern or question being raised by the general population. And now we have had many women who were in the initial trials for all three of the vaccines approved here in the United, or authorized for use in the United States, who became pregnant during the study time. And then since then, countless women who have both been pregnant or became pregnant after vaccination. So we know that's not an issue for us. And there's been several reports, I won't say there's studies because they haven't been finalized, but several reports out there show no increase in miscarriage or rate of people becoming pregnant since being vaccinated. These are incredibly safe. And then you asked the question about changing your DNA, and I know it gets scary when we start talking very scientific about things like messenger RNA or ribonucleic acids. And that sounds very scary when we talk about, you know, things that we saw in science fiction movies, but this isn't science fiction, this is science fact. There is no way that these vaccines can change your DNA any more than the virus itself could when you become infected with it. And therefore, you know, that is not a concern. This is actually just a very, very, very smart way of administering vaccine to protect people. And, do I wish it could make me taller? Yes, but it can't make me taller any more than it can make my hair less gray or change anything else about us. These do not affect your DNA in one way or another. What it does is it protects human life. And if that's what you're about, hey, that's what this is. But I totally agree with Dora. Sometimes it's that one-on-one conversation. Countless times at the Cross Insurance Center, somebody would show up very nervous, maybe halfway through the line, kind of, you know, get that look in their face, and just sitting there and having a calm conversation. What is it that you're most worried about? And usually we can talk that through using science, not fear, and then being just a kind, gentle voice of reason.
Karen, thanks for your call. And following up on that, Dr. Jarvis, I've seen studies that people don't trust most people who are giving this information, but they do trust their own doctors. And so I'm wondering what individual doctors in Maine are doing to reach out to their patients that perhaps they weren't doing before.
Yeah, that's a great question. So both at Maine Health and Northern Light Health, you know, we are now administering vaccines in some of our practices and trying to expand that out on a daily basis. Northern Light Health has a commitment that by next week, we will be administering vaccines in all of our primary care locations. Similarly, in those for eligible pediatric population in our pediatric clinics, and then in our women health clinics as well, and certain of our specialty clinics. So we continue to expand out that. Currently, we're able to do it in all of our retail pharmacies as well. And there are many pharmacies out there that are able to administer vaccines. So there is that availability. But sometimes it is that one-on-one conversation that makes all the difference, is sitting down with that trusted voice who you've trusted your life to for years now, of just sitting down and hearing what they've had to say. And, you know, it's great that Dora and I are available and able to come on shows like this to kind of talk about things. But for most people, we are either just a voice on a radio or a face on TV. But when I have a conversation with my patients who I have cared for well over a decade, that's a very different conversation. I know them. I know their fears. I know their concerns. I also know who their family is. And so reaching out to your trusted care provider is probably the best way. I will not say that reaching out to Facebook or friends and family is always the best source of accurate information. Listen to people who actually do keep up on the literature, who are, you know, on a daily basis getting updates from people like Dora and I, who spend a lot of our time researching this information so that we can be accurate, not just giving it to the public, but giving it to our fellow providers who work with and for us. And so that often is the conversation that does the trick, and maybe is what alleviates the fear.
So many questions coming in. I'll send this one from Nancy to you, Dora. Nancy asks, I have been happy with my hairdresser for many years, but she is adamant about not getting vaccinated. I'm 83, fully vaccinated. I would wear a mask during a haircut appointment, but she says she doesn't wear masks now. Am I at risk when I go for a haircut?
That is a very tough situation. You're fully vaccinated, so that's great. So you've got that armor on, as Dr. Fauci likes to call it, or the fire suit. But yeah, you still don't want to go in the middle of a fire. I think one of the questions is, what I ask all the time of myself is, do I want to share breathed air with this person, with these people, if I'm going into a, you know, store or something? And because that's really what it's about. And there's different people are going to have different answers to that. Personally, particularly where you're an older person, you're over 60, so you're, you know, you're at high risk if you were to get infected. And again, the vaccine is tremendously effective. It prevents disease primarily, so it doesn't necessarily completely prevent the infection that is the virus infecting your nose and mouth. So because of your age, particularly, I'd be extra cautious. And you're going to be sharing breathed air with a hairdresser who is not masked and is and they're unvaccinated. So I wouldn't want to go to a hairdresser in your shoes if they were unvaccinated and unmasked. If they're vaccinated, fine. And I think my hairdresser is still wearing a mask, which I really appreciate, because it's also not just about COVID, but you know, one of the questions that I ask myself, as I mentioned, is, do I want to share breathed air with this person? And you know, a lot of times the answer is no, because I don't want to get a cold. I don't want to get flu when flu season comes around again. I don't want to get other things that are respiratory. You know, we've learned a lot about respiratory illnesses and how they're transmitted through these aerosols and respiratory droplets. You know, I've got asthma. When I get a cold, I'm out for a while, and I don't want to miss work and have it to stay home because I've got symptoms, even if I'm COVID negative. So to me, it's not just about, you know, protecting yourself against COVID, but also protecting yourself against other things. And I just, you know, a hairdresser, that's a pretty, you know, it's a very close contact for quite a while, you know, usually at least a half an hour to an hour, depending on what you're having done. So to me, you're going to be sharing that breathed air with that person. So you have to stop and think, okay, are they vaccinated? Are they going to mask? I would prefer them to be vaccinated and masked.
And Dr. Jarvis, before we move on, you have a little story that relates to this, don't you?
Yeah, a couple of months ago, I was in my barber's chair getting my haircut, having left the cross center, and gotten a phone call that we still had vaccine available. It was at the end of the day. And I knew that my barber wanted to get vaccinated. So I turned to her and said, "What are you doing after you finish cutting my hair?" And she dutifully drove over to the Cross Center and got her vaccine and was delighted that she was able to get it a little bit early. But she continued to mask until the masking mandate finished up last week. But I think it was a good public service for herself and for her clients. And I encourage everybody that has a service job where they are coming in contact with the population, or if you yourself are coming in contact with lots of people in the population, that you do get vaccinated, and in some circumstances continue to mask. I will say that when I go out shopping, I continue to mask, even though I've been fully vaccinated since January. I do that for a lot of reasons. I have a daughter that's a cancer survivor, and I don't want her to have any increased risk. So she herself is fully vaccinated. And then of course I still see patients. And so I want to make sure that I am staying safe for myself so I can stay safe for my patients. And if you care about your clientele, vaccinate, mask up.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from H.M. Payson, proud sponsor of the 50th anniversary of Masterpiece on Maine Public Television, and Evergreen Home Performance with careers in home energy efficiency renovation. Learn more at evergreenyourhome.com/careers.
I'm Robin Young. A new cancer DNA blood test tells doctors whether most tumors have returned months before scans can and before those tumors can grow.
Prior to this test, everybody was in the same scenario after surgery. You might or might not have cells left, and we don't know that. But now we can see the invisible.
That's next time, here and now.
Stay tuned. That's coming up shortly after Maine Calling from 12 noon until 2 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of the Portland Bach Experience, a 10-day festival of innovative programs from full orchestral events to outdoor performances. The concerts will be performed live at venues throughout Midcoast and Southern Maine from June 11th through the 20th and include in-person and virtual viewing options. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off tickets. For details on the Portland Bach Experience and the Maine Public member discount, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. Joining us today, Dr. Dora Mills with Maine Health and Dr. Jim Jarvis with Northern Light Health. They are talking about the latest understanding of COVID-19, variants, vaccinations, and more. And they're taking your questions. You can call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. So many questions coming in. We're going to get to as many as possible. Going to Joanne in Harrison. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Good morning. I had a severe anaphylaxis reaction to the J&J vaccine. Is it too soon to ask if the Novavax could be a safe alternative as a booster next fall?
Dr. Jarvis.
Yeah, it probably would be a safe booster if we needed to have a booster, because the technology is a little bit different. But I think that's the discussion that you really wanted to have with your primary care physician and any others that are taking care of you, to make sure that it wasn't, that the thought wasn't a specific component. Right now, I'm not sure of all the components that are in the Novavax, because it hasn't come to market yet. So most likely there's a safe alternative for you, but you do want to check that with your primary care provider.
All right. Thanks for your question, Joanne. An email here from Mary Ellen. Dora, I am fully vaccinated. What are the chances I can still be infected with COVID-19? What situations are most risky? Should I wear a mask around unvaccinated children? Is it to protect both of us? Those are the big questions of the moment, aren't they?
They are the big questions of the moment. And there are really, you know, the hard thing is there are no real clear-cut answers to that. We don't fully know what your chances are of getting infected. Now, infected is different than diseased. So infection is when you have basically the virus, you've been exposed to the virus, and you can culture it or detect it in your nose or mouth, in your saliva. And then disease is when it goes further into the body and causes you to have symptoms. So we know that these vaccines are extraordinarily effective. They are primarily, the data are in the clinical trials, we're looking at how effective they were at preventing disease. So they weren't really testing how effective they were at preventing infection, although it does appear that they're quite effective at detecting infection, but not, you know, 100%. And usually if you, with most vaccines, and it appears true with the, at least the mRNA vaccines, that if you do get infected, even if you're fully vaccinated, that you have, generally speaking, probably a lower viral load, lower virus in your nose and mouth, and also therefore less chance of transmitting to others. But it doesn't mean that you couldn't get infected. So you have to think about things like, are the people I'm going to be around, are they fully vaccinated? So yeah, I encourage you to, you know, primarily be around people who are fully vaccinated. It depends on what your risk factors are. So if you're, you know, older than 50, 60, 65, 70, and you have particularly a lot of underlying conditions, if you've had particularly if you're any age and you've had an organ transplant, like a solid organ transplant, a liver, a kidney transplant, you need to be really in close contact with your specialist, your doctors about that, because they have been shown to be fully vaccinated and not necessarily have a full immune response to the vaccine. So if you have underlying conditions and or you're older, you may want to take some extra precautions, because even though it does protect, the vaccines are so protective against you being hospitalized or dying from the disease, we're still early on in all of this, and there's still a fair amount of disease out there. So we're not, you know, our disease rates are still there where they were last fall in Maine. They're not where they were in February of 2020, which was almost nothing. And I think, again, it gets down to, do you want to share the breathed air with the people or the person you're going to be around? If they're under 12, obviously they're not eligible yet for vaccine, that brings in some other issues. I'll give you two quick examples. One is, I do have a niece with a couple of really young children that I'm around a lot, and traditionally, pre-pandemic, was around a lot more. And so, you know, I'm kind of trying to decide, is like, okay, how do I interact? So I've been interacting with them, but it's we're outdoors. You know, we're up at camp in the summer, in the weekends, and we're outdoors, and I give them a hug, but I don't stay as close to them indoors, that kind of thing. And they're not around a lot of other kids. Their parents are fully vaccinated. They're not circulating out in the community. On the other hand, I have a couple of other extended family members who are school age, but too young to be vaccinated. They're in school full time. They're out and about. They're in sports teams and the like. So I'm more careful with them because I know they're around a lot of other kids who are also not vaccinated because they can't be. So I'm much more careful around those two, great nephews. So, you know, you have to kind of weigh the risks and the benefits kind of every situation. And my book, and it's really hard to have hard and fast rules. So, but it is, you have to kind of look at their risks of getting COVID, are they vaccinated? Can they be vaccinated? Because if they can be, I, you know, really just encourage, like, look, I mean, I'm not having people over at my house unless they're fully vaccinated, unless there's those couple little kids I mentioned. So I think you have to take in, what are your risks for getting disease if you were to get infected, and whom could you pass it on to if you did get infected? Are you around people who are much higher risk, like Jim mentioned, his daughter, you know, and I'm around some people too. I don't want to convey it to them, transmit it to them, even if I don't get that sick or get sick at all. So there's a lot of factors there, sure. But it kind of boils down to, do you want to share the same breathed air with this person,
sure,
and these people?
And talking about balancing different measures. Maura in Falmouth, go ahead.
Yes, hi. My daughter has Down syndrome, and she's been fully vaccinated. I've been fully vaccinated. We've been going almost nowhere for the past 15 months. However, our church has reopened, and am I being overly cautious because I don't feel like we're going to attend in-person church inside? Because most church people don't believe in getting the COVID vaccine. We can wear a mask, but I feel like, you know, there's a lot of singing, there's a lot of praising, but I just feel it's not safe. What is your take?
Dr. Jarvis.
Yeah, well, first and foremost is do what feels comfortable for you, not trying to make others feel comfortable. I think that's the key thing we should all be doing now. We can all remember just a few years ago, you know, seeing people who were traveling who traveled with masks on, and we all thought that was kind of funny. They were probably the smartest people on the planet. And if it makes you feel more comfortable when you're out and about with other people to continue to wear your mask, please do so. And if you're one that doesn't want to, don't point that out to another human being. It's no place or business. You don't know what their life or what their circumstances are. Like I said, if I'm going to be indoors in a space with a lot of people, I do continue to wear my mask. You know that all of our healthcare facilities and our long-term care facilities, the staff and patients and visitors still wear masks. There's a reason for that, because we're trying to protect one another. And so keep doing that. As far as your preference as to where it is that you happen to go in a more social format, whether that be church or to work or to shopping, you know, that's an individual decision that you'll have to make for yourself. I think you have some unique circumstances there, particularly with your daughter, that make it so that you do want to be a little bit more protective. So no, I don't think that's a bad thing at all, as long as you're still being able to communicate with other human beings and have some kind of personal touch. If you're completely isolating yourself now, then that's something that needs to be discussed and something that you really need to do some introspection about, because this is not the time that we can be completely socially isolated from others. And in fact, because you're all fully vaccinated, it is a chance for you to be out there in the community, but do it in a safe manner and do it with a manner that makes you feel comfortable.
I just want to add, I so agree,
Jim. It's about what you feel comfortable about. That's so important. And the other thing is that things may change over time as our disease rates go down. You know, if we go down to really, really low rates, which I hope we get to soon, then, you know, people like Jim and I, who will follow that data quite a bit, we may feel even much more comfortable not masking in a lot more settings. You know, so even though we've got our own kind of personal criteria now, that could change depending on the context of the pandemic in Maine at some point as well.
Yeah, all I was right, out at the Botanical Gardens last weekend, and it was just wonderful to be outside with people without a mask on. But when we went into the gift shop, mask went right back on again.
Yeah. I'm the same way, Jim. I would do the same thing.
Maura, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Thomaston and Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. Did you say Nancy and Thomaston?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Yes, I'd like to make a comment and then a question. For the people that I've spoken to who have been vaccinated without needing an incentive, there's a lot of resentment out there that states, including Maine, are giving away, you know, fishing licenses and gift certificates to L.L. Bean. So just to put that out there so you know that there's a lot of resentment around where I live, and also with the folks who have been vaccinated who didn't need an incentive. And then my question is, do your guests feel that is the right way to go? In other words, you know, it's a bribe, and whether or not they feel that is going to get at the root cause of people that are hesitant.
Sure, Nancy, and I'm going to throw this question to Dr. Jarvis, since the governor is Dr. Mills' sister. So, Dr. Jarvis, how do you feel about the idea of, as Nancy says, bribing, offering incentives for people to get vaccinated?
You know, I have mixed feelings about it. I will say that, you know, there were certainly people who stood up very early on. There's people that were in the initial trials, right? Their incentive was because they wanted to help other people. And certainly in healthcare, when we stood up back in December and January to be some of the first ones to get vaccinated, along with our first responders and people in long-term care facilities. But the fact of the matter is, we are in a public health epidemic like we have not seen in our lifetime. You know, unless you were around during the 1918 flu, you know, this is a brand new moment for us. And if it takes some incentives to get us a little bit further along, maybe that's not such a bad idea. And if that's the encouragement, or if that's the last thing that you needed just to get you to the vaccine clinic or to your own doctor's office or pharmacy or pop-in clinic, you know, I can't really object to that. Do I understand the mentality of, well, wait a minute, I did what I was supposed to do and I didn't get anything from it? Well, you did. You got the protection of the vaccine and the knowledge that not only did you help yourself, but you helped everybody else in your community. including that person who needed the fishing license. So
sure.
There's that too.
Nancy, thanks for your question. I'm going to move on here. This is an email from Jack, and we are getting tight on time here. Jack asks, if you have been fully vaccinated but take an immunosuppressant drug like Enbrel, what's your advice since immunity levels are not known? Dr. Dora.
Yeah, Mills. So you do need to check in with your specialist and your primary care doctor. People who are immunosuppressed, who are particularly on strong long-term immunosuppressant medications, especially if they've had an organ transplant, as an example, they do often not mount a full immune response to the vaccine. So you want to be in touch with them. If you Google CDC, COVID vaccine clinical considerations. This is a website that I know Jim knows well too, because we use it all the time. So you Google US CDC COVID vaccine clinical considerations. You'll find this great website that it's really for healthcare professionals, but it gives you lots of really robust information on if you have allergies, or if you are immunosuppressed, if you're this or that. And it tells you what the kind of things that the doctors are my nurses are reading about the vaccines and, for instance, immunosuppression. But basically, the US CDC right now is saying if you are significantly immunosuppressed, then you should, even if you're fully vaccinated, you should act as if you're not vaccinated at all. So you should go around with a mask and keep 6 feet distance, just like we did most of the last 15 months.
Sure. We'll try to squeeze in another question. We'll go to Nancy, another Nancy from Goldsboro. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. Great. Thank you very much. My question is, I am unvaccinated and I am very careful. I wear a mask. I live alone. I avoid crowds. My question is, my pod that I hang out with, my friends who I see regularly and work with, who are vaccinated, are they at risk because of me? I also get tested regularly.
Dr. Jarvis.
Yeah, so Nancy, that's an excellent question. And the fact of the matter is everybody's at risk. It's just a matter of how much at risk you are. Because we do know that people who are fully vaccinated can get COVID-19 and can have severe illness from it. It's just exceedingly rare, but it's possible. And when you're talking about population health, we talk about what's the chance of 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000, 1 in 100,000, or in our case, 1.3 million people here in Maine. The risk is only you, right? What's your own risk? And so in that case, yes, you are putting them at risk. It's just unknown as to how much at risk you're doing that. And if there's any chance that you can be vaccinated, I encourage you to do so.
Nancy, thanks for your question. And that will be our last question for the hour. Thank you, as always, to both of you for joining us. Such a treat to talk to both of you. Dr. Dora Mills, Chief Health Improvement Officer at Maine Health, and Dr. James Jarvis, Senior Physician Executive and System Incident Command at Northern Light Health. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we will be talking about the First Amendment and how it relates to current events. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.